the passions, the great and the small, are functionally like drugs that we take to avoid reality. So we can think of spiritual delusion as an avoidance of God, self, and others. I mean, it's an invitation God gives us to be in a love relationship, and we refuse the meeting because of the cost.
Have you ever thought of your spiritual life as a disorder? At least parts of it? Wait, before you answer too quickly, stay with us and listen to our feature conversation today on Come Receive the Light.
We're drawn to the love, but we don't want to pay the price of love. And that creates symptoms of spiritual delusion because we avoid reality and meeting the dialogue with God and one another.
We'll hear that full interview a bit later, after we learn about a new video tool which helps young people understand better what the Apostle Peter described as the hope we have within us.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, you know, if you look at the educational research, some people get excited about it, some people wish it were a little bit different, but, you know, the reality is that, you know, we live in a very visual world today. And when you look at the span of an average video, you know, 2 to 3 minutes seems to be a really sweet spot for learners today, especially our youth.
More about that video project as we begin another weekly edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network on the web at myocn.net and on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. One of our goals at this ministry is to demystify the truths of God and His Word, the Bible. Now, those truths are not always easily understood. As Paul explained in 1 Corinthians, we still see through a glass darkly. But to mix metaphors, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and we're on a journey to that tunnel's end every single week, and are glad you've come along today. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Orthodox School of Theology in Brookline, Massachusetts.
There's a new resource and teaching tool for our children, youth, and families called Scribbles, as part of a new ministry titled Living Orthodox. This private website is committed to bringing faith, history, and daily living into conversation. We'd like to invite Dr. Mark Tarpley, its creator, to tell us more about it. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me today. It's a real pleasure.
Let me give our listeners a little background. You're a state-certified teacher in Texas. You've completed your Master of Divinity from St. Tikhon's, as well as your doctorate from Southern Methodist University in Dallas. By day, you are a director of education of a medical education company, in addition to owning and operating an ACT test preparation company in Dallas-Fort Worth area. You are definitely qualified, I would say, to teach faith. So what inspired you to use the internet and video as a tool?
You know, for a number of years, I've worked with youth and college-age students through Orthodox Ministries, OCF, and in local community. And the genesis of the Living Orthodox site itself dates back about a year and a half ago, where my oldest daughter, who was in eighth grade at the time, had come home with an assignment to look at the question of worldview and how we understand worldview. And she was talking through, you know, the conversations they had had in class, and was trying to understand, you know, as Orthodox Christians, how do we think about a worldview? And so as we were talking, I started talking about, we know it's important to understand epistemology, or that is how we know what we know as Orthodox Christians, and how that might contrast with a common rational Western approach to knowledge of the truth, and how that forms our worldview. And so we were talking about different aspects of that question. And as we were walking through that question, and I was trying to be responsive to her, I looked up and could tell that, you know, she really wasn't understanding what I was talking about. And so I thought, well, you know, this isn't working out so well. And so I ended up picking up a sheet of paper and a pencil and started, you know, scribing out a visual of what I was trying to communicate to her in terms of an Orthodox worldview and how we come to that worldview and understand it. And suddenly she was able to start communicating back to me, you know, a much, much clearer understanding of what I was trying to communicate to her. And about that time, my wife came by, and she's been obviously with me and through all the graduate work. And she said, you know, sweetheart, you know, that does a really good job of communicating those ideas that I've heard you talk about a lot. Then a couple of my other children came by and said, you know, Dad, that makes sense. And so I got on the phone with a good friend from seminary, and we kind of kicked some ideas back and forth. And, you know, really that was the genesis of a recognition of taking sometimes what are perceived as very complicated or difficult ideas in the way that visuals and scribing can sort of bring forth those truths in ways that make it easier to understand, especially for our youth.
Well, I think you've almost answered this question, but I'm going to sort of piggyback on what you just said. So as an educator, then, can you tell us why you feel this particular medium is so effective? I guess you're saying it's because it's reaching this generation, right?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, you know, if you look at the educational research, some people get excited about it. Some people wish it were a little bit different. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, we live in a very visual world today. And when you look at the span of an average video, you know, 2 to 3 minutes seems to be a really sweet spot for learners today, especially our youth. You know, they engage in the visual and motion and animation. And I think, you know, if we look at the church as a whole in our worship, and we certainly have always historically had iconography, we have the physical aspects of our worship. And so I think it's really very much in the DNA of our tradition, but video itself is very prominent within our learning modalities for our youth. In addition, you know, video allows for the social platforms of sharing through the different social media outlets, and also allows for a lot of audio stimulation as well, whether it's, you know, sometimes like with the scribbles, there'll be, you know, some chanting in the background or whatever it may be. And then I think video allows you in a short time frame to focus and concentrate on a particular idea and to develop that idea in a way that springs forth other types of questions. So, yeah, I think that video is a very effective, especially short videos, for our youth and the younger generations.
Now, there might be some who would say that video technology is, I mean, I've heard people call it the devil, that it doesn't allow us this type of interaction, social interaction that we've been used to for years where we talk. I mean, people will talk about families who will go out to dinner, for example, and there'll be a mother, a father, and let's say two children. All of them are on their devices, and they're not talking to each other. They're just communicating. They might even text each other across the table a message. But we're talking about a wise use of technology, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at the patristic tradition, you often see, you know, examples like with a knife. You know, the knife is in some ways neutral, right? You know, it can be used to help, you know, serve food, or it can be used to do harm to someone. And so I think in general, when we're talking about technology as a whole, you know, technology isn't just computers. We've had technology in every generation. And so it's the means and ways in which that technology is used. And for sure, we've had a significant proliferation of technological developments with the smartphone. And certainly I sympathize with the concerns of human interaction that come with it. But at the same time, you know, it's the process, and it's always a challenge for Orthodox Christians is understanding, you know, where we place our boundaries and what cultivates the Christian life and the seeking of God's grace in our lives. So I think within that context, you know, you could argue, I think very reasonably, that if a family were to watch a scribble, you know, a short video for 2 to 3 minutes, then it creates a springboard for actual conversation with each other in order to deepen the faith of the children and to deepen the communal aspects of the family as a whole. And so yeah, I think there's always trying to find that balance, and certainly there's always risk. But I think that, again, when you're dealing with the concept of technology, not just modern technology, that's always been a challenge.
Well, then let me ask you, I guess the next obvious question is, what do you cover? What topics do you present in Scribbles? I'm really, you've got my interest piqued at this point.
You know, we try to cover various types of topics. You know, we have quotes from the church fathers. So if you were to go to the site at livingorthodox.org, you would see, you know, a quote by St. Gregory the Theologian on procrastination, or on St. Anthony the Great on love of neighbor and how that connects with our love for God. Also, we have some instructional videos that, you know, we've created more. In other words, we've created the content ourselves and then put them into video format about, like, who is my neighbor, or how the Christian life, you know, is understood within the context of, you know, the parable of the garden and the sower and the seed. And then the other one right currently we have is the icon series. And, you know, I think that the icon is such a central and beautiful part of our tradition. And oftentimes we come up into a feast day and come up to the icon, but we may not be really sure what exactly that icon is communicating in all of the details. And so in some of the scribbles, we walk through the icon and explaining the different particular aspects. Within that whole context, I think the topics themselves are trying to connect our faith and our history and our daily living so that, you know, we can draw those connections. And then ultimately, in all these instances, draw ourselves closer into the life of the church and draw ourselves closer to Christ.
And do you have a particular favorite of the scribbles you've done?
Yeah, I think so far I would say that the scribble on the icon of the Letter of Divine Ascent, I think is the one that's most interesting to me, because I think that particular icon, when we get to the fourth Sunday of the Great Fast, and people come in the Great Fast, we're trying to struggle, and it's a time of repentance and a reflection. And a lot of times, I think when people come up to that particular icon, the focus is on the demons and those falling off the ladder, and it can present this communication of fear and fear of God, which is part of the icon does communicate the fact that we can fall. But I think there's other aspects of the icon that are often overlooked that are quite beautiful. For example, Christ is at the top with his arms open, waiting to receive those who are ascending. You have the angels who show strength in their vibrant colors and the strength of their wings in contrast to the demons who are interceding and encouraging the monastics as they ascend the ladder. And then down in the other corner, you have St. John of the Ladder himself with the monastic brotherhood encouraging those who are ascending. So you see Christ waiting to receive us, and you see the angelic hosts and the other brethren encouraging them in their ascent. And then you also just see the historical context of the fact that the icon itself is communicating one of the great ideas, fathers of the church in the Ladder of Divine Ascent. And so there's such a richness to that icon that when we enter the church on that feast day, it's a wonderful thing if, children and youth and young adults and even, adults can, when they come in, that the veneration of that icon draws them deeper into the liturgical worship of the church, which ultimately is our goal, is to draw closer to Christ. And so, gaining a knowledge and accumulation of knowledge in and of itself, it doesn't take us anywhere. But if, we can gain knowledge that helps us take steps in our life to love God and neighbor, then we're accomplishing our goal.
Well, Mark, I have to tell you, I'm impressed by the work you've done. I've been in the Salvation trenches now as a priest for 36 years, and I've always looked for new ways to carry the message, because we don't have to change the message. Sometimes we just have to change the methodology we use. So I think an obvious question from here is, how about expanding of the ministry? What do you plan to do to take this to the next level?
I think, again, in keeping with the vision of the site itself, Living Orthodox, is to connect faith, history, and daily living into conversation. And I think, as a society, there's a lot of struggles just as any society. But I think for Orthodox Christians, oftentimes it's very difficult to connect what, we might perceive as the mundane aspects of life, like we're in a job, we're at a water cooler at work, the mom at home struggling with the crying baby with the change diapers. But then we have, on the other hand, this beautiful theology of theosis or deification and the ascetic life. And so how do those connect? And, part of that is within the context, especially I think for our youth, how does this rich, vibrant faith that we see, how does this connect to my daily living and, the struggles that I engage in and the realities of, social media or smartphones? And so one area that working with youth and teaching over the years is the idea of, being able to cultivate a curriculum that looks at patristics and the church fathers, especially targeted towards 7th through 12th graders. And so that's an area where Living Orthodox will start to focus in releasing some of that curriculum content, in the hopes that it can service, homeschooling families, families that have children who are in school, within the family context, youth ministries or church school ministries as well. And so I think that's an area, in addition to the scribbles, that we'd really like to pursue, because so often it's the case that sort of the historical studies within the Christian tradition for our students today are offered, from other perspectives, and that seems to be an area that could certainly help to further strengthen the opportunities to help our youth through the challenges they face each day.
Well, Mark, we're very excited to be talking with you, and also to announce that you will be writing for the OCN and for our Sounding blog. So let me ask you that question. Where and what will you be focusing on when you deal with the Sounding?
Yeah, and I'd like to thank OCN for the opportunity to be part of the Sounding blog. It's definitely an honor, and I think the vision for the blog postings is to stay in line with the vision for Living Orthodox, which is to connect faith, history, and daily living. So And maybe the best way to answer your question is just to give you a couple of examples. You know, the plan for the first blog post is to look at a wonderful homily by St. Gregory Palamas on the myrrh-bearing women. But the practical implication is, how do we as families come out of the joy of Pascha as an opportunity to grow instead of that return before the great fast started, which is always a challenge for all of us. And so how can we engage and move out of Pascha and continue to grow and build off of what we've gained? And, you know, another blog post that I'm looking at is, as you mentioned earlier, I run an ACT company. And, you know, oftentimes a lot of the conversations that we run into at the ACT company is, how do I choose a good college? And we have this continued, I think, somewhat myth of, if you go to school and get a job and make a lot of money, you're going to be happy. And it's very easy to fall into that way of thinking. And so the thinking is, well, if I can score as high as I can on this test, then I can go to the best school, whatever that may be, and then I can get that job and make that money. And so, you know, I think important blog posters, you know, how should we as Orthodox Christians be thinking through that process of college selection? And connecting and taking care of our youth so that as they go through that process of entry into college, if that's what God wills and is an opportunity for them, they're making choices that will grow them in their faith and not deter them from pursuing their faith.
Mark, this has been a very, very good interview. I thank you so much for what you're doing with the talents that God has given you. Obviously, you're developing them. Listeners, we want to direct you to the website livingorthodox.org. They have a Facebook, they have YouTube, they have Twitter. And please, of course, come back to the OCN site at myocn.net and visit our blog called The Sounding to follow the work of Dr. Mark. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much, Father. It's greatly appreciated.
Dr. Mark Tarpley, guest number one on this edition of Come Receive the Light. We'll have a link to Dr. Tarpley's website, livingorthodox.org, on our website, myocn.net. That makes it a little bit easier for you. That's myocn.net. And, of course, our blog page, The Sounding, can be accessed through that website. There's a link right on our homepage. That's The Sounding, featuring, along with many other blogs, Dr. Mark Tarpley. This is Come Receive the Light, an outreach ministry of the Orthodox Christian Network, again on the web at myocn.net, also on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. As we move into our feature conversation, let me share this quote with you from G.K. Chesterton. "The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and oftentimes left untried."
I'm very pleased to welcome Dr. Stephen Muse, Director of Counselor Training and Clinical Services at the D.A. and Elizabeth Turner Ministry Resource Center in Columbus, Georgia. He's here to talk with us about something he calls post-traumatic spiritual disorder. Thanks for joining us, Stephen.
Thank you, Father Chris.
Many of us have probably heard about post-traumatic stress disorder on the news. But this post-traumatic spiritual disorder, I don't know what that is, and maybe some people will be asking the same question. How is it similar? How is it different?
Well, they haven't heard about it because it's something that I coined,
okay.
a term. And what it refers to is coming to terms with being victims, witnesses, and murderers of Christ, as well as beneficiaries of Christ's sacrifice in our lives.
Hmm.
So, ultimately, it has to do with what is our responsibility in the love relationship that God offers us, which puts this question to us at every given moment. How much of God's heart can you bear?
You know, I said something sort of tongue-in-cheek during services of Holy Week, but I'm going to share it with you, and maybe we're getting, or we will get in our conversation today, to some of the roots of this. But I told people, look to the left and right of you, because you may not see these people again for another year. And the people that are in church have come for something. I'm just trying to figure out why they come back every year and don't come in between.
Mm.
Is some of that disorder? Is that what we're experiencing there, do you think?
I want to be careful with the word disorder.
Okay.
To get out of, you know, sort of the clinical pathology and look at this more in terms of how the key component to post-traumatic stress is how we dissociate
mm-hmm.
from an event from ourselves, really, because of the intensity of an event. So from the standpoint of the murder of Christ, you could say that by not being in church, in the liturgy, except once or twice a year, at a certain level, we could look at that as dissociation. Mm. And the question then becomes, have we reduced Christ and the church and theology to an add-on because it doesn't reach the heart? The medicine never gets to the place where it can change us.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, then it's a celebration we go to, you know, once a year.
Once a year.
So this is really the question that I'm trying to raise, is that
it's a good question.
The murder of Christ begins with the foundation of creation and the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world.
Okay.
So it's inherent in the fabric of creation and in all of our choices. It gets played out.
What are some of the signs or the symptoms that we exhibit that indicate that trauma?
Well, the passions, the great and the small, are functionally like drugs that we take to avoid reality. So we can think of spiritual delusion as an avoidance of God, self, and others. It's a refusal of meeting. I mean, it's an invitation God gives us to be in a love relationship, and we refuse the meeting because of the cost. So this is a dimension of the personal level, but the spiritual warfare also has a less noticed systemic dimension. For example, genocide of indigenous populations, whether we call the Armenian murders genocide or not, slavery in the United States and the difficulty of addressing the fallout from this. This is spiritual warfare on a very large scale because as a country, we deny many of our problems, which creates further suffering in the world. Largest prison population per capita in the world is in our country. The ignoring of Indian populations who suffer like a third world country, Pine Ridge Reservation. You can see it in terms of without community of witnesses to a trauma, nothing changes. So women's suffrage, civil rights, the first safe houses for women from domestic violence in the 70s, all these came from spiritual warfare on a communal level where you had a political movement.
So those symptoms, those behaviors are symptoms of a problem, not just problems in and of themselves.
Exactly, and they're both at the personal, individual level, but on a societal level. And so I want us to think of spiritual warfare not simply my personal struggle to become healed, but how I am part of the whole fabric of creation that Christ is putting God and human life on the line in order to unite.
Okay. Well, you suggest that we exhibit the post-traumatic spiritual disorder due to our relationship with Christ, and you said, I think, specifically his crucifixion. Now, why not in relation, let's say, to the fall? I mean, haven't people exhibited these behaviors since then?
Well, if we think of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, chronologically, I would say that's prior to the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the standpoint of Kairos, a vertical movement to any moment in time, the question is always, how much of a dialogue will you have with me, God says to humanity? And the Gospels, thank goodness, point out how difficult this was so that the disciples dissociate outside of Gethsemane three times when they're asked to be neptically awake.
Mm-hmm.
They can't bear what Christ is bearing. And this is the human problem. In order to relate to God, who loves us, we would relate in returning that love. And that will mean picking up part of Gethsemane.
So we don't do it because we're afraid to pick it up?
Exactly.
We can't bear it.
We're drawn to the love, but we don't want to pay the price of love.
Okay, there it is. We don't want to pay the price.
And that creates symptoms of spiritual delusion because we avoid reality and meeting the dialogue with God and one another and the world as a result.
Can anyone bear that, do you think? Can any human being bear that kind of suffering?
Only in relationship with God. And that's the thing that I think if you look at, say, for example, Jacob wrestling with the darkness, Job entering the whirlwind, what you see is something that is beyond our capacity to hide behind our doctrine or our feelings or our normal view of how the world is and actually meet God on the raw.
Well, how does this fit in with the traditional Orthodox teachings on the nature of the world or how we understand mankind's relationship with God?
Well, we typically think of theosis as, say, the goal, becoming fully human. If we think of that as possible only in terms of an encounter with God, then that encounter takes place where God reveals himself most clearly, which is at the place where heaven and earth touch, and that's in Christ. So I think this is the fullness of orthodoxy, which is to love the world as Christ loves us. And this has to be understood not as some sort of personal healing for ourselves alone, like a spiritual capitalism or something. I get mine, but you don't get yours. But rather that it's part of entering into the Hagia Kinonia, the holy, both the Holy Eucharist and the Kinonia, the holy people of God. So, as St. John Chrysostom says, when he leaves the altar, the divine altar, he goes to the altar of his brothers and sisters.
Hmm.
You can't divorce, the liturgy cannot be divorced from the world any more than we can divorce the two natures of Christ. They're seamless. So we betray either by going to one without the other.
So, my friend, how do we treat that disorder? How do we, what can we do about our condition then?
Well, I'd say love is the only cure. This is what God is showing us. Mm-hmm. And the only way is a way that can be lived in love. And so we could say love is prayer. Not how many times I say the Kumbhoskini.
Mm-hmm.
Love requires facing the world as it is, meeting each other without seeking to hide within the walls of the church or the enclosure of our prayers or our theology. In the high priestly prayer in John, he does not say, Christ does not pray to take us out of the world, but to leave us in the world so that we are leaven, we are salt. So again, I think this points to the way is Christ. And who is Christ? Christ is the love of God that unites heaven and earth. It's the dialogue of meeting with the Holy Trinity. And this cannot be done with our head or our emotions or our body, but only as a full existential partner in that relationship lived. This is where I think we get put to the test in the church, because we're always looking for a way, without realizing it, a way out to evade loving as we're loved.
We look forward to hearing from you again, Stephen.
Thank you, Father Chris.
To listen again to this conversation or to hear other conversations with Dr. Stephen Muse, just go to our website at myocn.net, click on the Listen button on the homepage, and then select Come Receive the Light. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another broadcast, and I hope you'll join us as well. Remember, we're a nonprofit outreach. We really do depend upon your financial support. If you'd like to be a team partner with this group called the Orthodox Christian Network, go on the website, click on the Donate button on the homepage, and then select one of the many ways in which you can give financially to this ministry, either one time or on an ongoing basis. That's myocn.net, and select the Donate button on the homepage. Have a blessed week, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.